Welcome to the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show, your guide, of course, to better cricket, wherever you are, whoever you are. We're here for the next half an hour or so to help you out. My name's David Hinchliffe, and I look after things here. And helping me to help you are two very fine cricket coaches. The first is the director of cricket at Millfield School. It's Mark Garraway. Hello, Garraway. Not at the school today, though.
No, it's half term, so I'm first half of the week, I'm being a very good house husband. Second part of the week, I'm coaching with the Tom Maynard Academy alongside Ian Harvey, Matt Maynard, Mark Wallace, recently retired from cricket, Mark Wallace, and various others popping in throughout the week. So I'm out there for a few days, which I'm very much looking forward to.
Fantastic. Secondly, it's the cricket professional at Portsmouth Grammar School. It's Sam Lavery. Hello, Lavers. I'm concerned about what kind of reply I'm going to get here. But how are you?
No, I'm fine. I'm fine. I'm just finishing off wrapping up for the day with coaching. So, just shuffling around the sports hall, getting everything tidied away, and all done. So hopefully not too echoey initially.
It definitely will be, but hopefully we can sort that out as we go on.
Apologies. These high ceilings.
There's only so much you can fix in post. Let's start then. Let's start with Gareth, with you, because you know it's a bit easy to chat to you without that reverb. And I was thinking about buzzwords again. It's something that we've covered before, buzzwords or jargon busting, that kind of thing. But there's always new things coming in, and I was thinking about this week talking about some of the more sort of businessy like ones you hear, the ones you might hear in a boardroom or in a office as much as you might hear a cricket coach say these days. And of course, they get a bad rep, those kind of words, because people think, oh, it's double speak, it's not clear language, it's not, why would you say areas when you mean line and length, that sort of thing. But actually, I think there is some useful information in there if we can get it out. So let's talk a little bit about some of those buzzwords, those businessy buzzwords, and see if we think they're useful or not, as well as explain them. So I've got a list here, and let's just go through them one at a time, Gareth. Maybe you can give me a little bit of your thoughts on each one before we move on to the next one. And the first one of those is the word environment. What do you think about that?
Oh, I think it's highly relevant, yeah. Your environment is basically how you live and operate and interact and communicate in any form of team, whether it's in a business room, whether it's a company, whether it's a football ground, whether it's on side of cricket pitches with your team. Yeah, I think environment's really important. The more mastery you have in your environment, more awareness you have of your environment, I think the better you will be.
And do you think there's opposition to that word? Do you think it's counted as a double speak word by some people?
Yeah, probably. But I think people are getting a better understanding of it. Maybe from 5 or 6 years ago, when it sort of first started doing the rounds, people did see it mostly as something coming in from business. But actually, when you cut beneath the word, I think every good team that we've played in, we recognise that the environment around that good team has been a solid one, has been a good one, has been an honest one. So I think people are getting that correlation now.
Yeah, you might say team spirit, environment is more than that, isn't it? But yeah. If you're trying to equate it to an older term, you might say team spirit, mightn't you? Next word, Lavers, now you're in a comfortable position, is constraints.
I suppose some of the words that will come up do create a bit of apprehension, and people kind of see it as something that's trying to have a bit of disguise or trying to be maybe cleverer than it needs to be. But I think constraints are fairly straightforward and people can relate to it, and it's something that within cricket is pretty applicable. I think we can understand that there are certain things that would fall under that bracket, and that it's as good a word as any. And it might be that we've had other words, or there are other words that people have used previously that they like, but I don't think that would fall under the bracket of trying to pull the wool over anyone's eyes, which I guess is what people sometimes think about these buzzwords, isn't it?
It's a simple way of saying constraints is a way of saying you're focusing the mind, isn't it, Gareth? You could say, you know, we apply these constraints to this drill, and it lets you focus on the thing that we want to improve.
Yeah, or the thing you want to explore, which I use constraints a lot around things that you want to explore. So, for example, if somebody comes in with the notion that you cannot play against a spin, if you play, into the spin, then you're going to be getting yourself into trouble. Well, then I'll say, well, okay, I'll tell you what, let's have a round now where I'll throw 12 off-spinning deliveries at you and you're a right-hander, and your aim is to play into the spin, and let's see how that control is actually compromised, or whether the compromise actually happens at all. And there's an example of a constraint. And often what tends to happen is that people then try and get out of these limited bleeds because they'll hit one really well, or they'll defend a couple really well, or they'll feel quite comfortable. And instead of playing into the spin being given as a risk, actually, with skill, it can be something that you can adopt into the whole of your game plan against spin. So there's an example, and I think it's about trying to get people to experiment beyond their limited beliefs.
Let's move on then. Let's talk about intention. So where are you on that one?
Intention for me is it's about what you are. Again, it's a bit of a focus one, I suppose. It's the intention today is to hit as many balls over the top. So it's a way of getting you to focus your mind on the body shape and the angle of attack and things to get the ball over the top. So I think intentions is a good one. It's another word which gets us to focus our mind on doing something slightly different, or to focus our mind on being really precise in what we're going about rather than just playing.
And I find that works. Using that word works with people. If you're asking them, if they're not sure what they're doing, and you say, "What's your intention?" It works a lot better with people, of them giving you an answer rather than just saying, "Oh, I just want to get my eye in," or "I just want to hit some balls," or "I just want to get some form," or those sort of more vague things. But if you say to someone, "What's your intention?" They actually look up in the sky for a second, and they go, "Well, I guess I want to hit more balls along the ground." Oh, okay, we've got something to work on then. It seems to work well for that, focusing the mind in that way.
And it's a good word. It's a good word not to get somebody grumpy when you talk to them and talk to them about what they are doing or what, you perceive them doing.
Yeah.
Because, how many times have you been a batter down in there and a coach has come up to you and go, "Well, what are you doing?" And all of a sudden, you get bristly, don't you? And that interaction ends up being a really bad one because both people are on the defensive. Whereas when you talk about intentions, then it's a bit of a softer way of going about it. But actually, when you leave that conversation, somebody goes back to doing what they were, they're going back to their practice. Actually, it's a more positive outcome. So I quite like using the word intention, particularly if somebody gets out. Playing an option, I think it's really important to explore what their intention was around that, rather than going, "What the bloody hell were you doing having a go at that?" Which has been, we've all done, haven't we, as coaches? We've all been in there. But it's definitely a good use of language around how we can get to some learning outcomes to come out of even the worst situation.
Let's move on. Let's go on to outcome. Labors, you want to give me your explanation of outcome?
Yeah, I use that one quite a lot, and I think it's something that initially when I started to use it, some of the players, or especially the kids, maybe felt like they needed a bit more interpretation as to what I was talking about. But subsequently, it's a word we use all the time. I guess sometimes you can look at using other words like goals or objectives, and I think outcomes is really good because it's talking a bit more immediately. It's talking about something we're working towards in the present rather than something that we're looking for in the future. And again, it leaves it open, so it's not saying, "Oh, you didn't." How would you perceive your outcome? Isn't saying that, "Did you swing it? You didn't swing it. You did swing it. You didn't hit your line. Didn't live there." Again, it's leaving it open to them to interpret what the outcomes were, or it's leaving them open to interpret how they want to define the outcomes themselves. So outcomes is one I use all day, every day. And now there's a pretty good understanding of how we're using it and what we're talking about, I think it becomes a really valuable word for everyone, everyone concerned, really.
We're running a bit low on time on this section, but let's do one more. And it's one that I like a lot, but I struggle to find another way, another word to use. So probably should just use it more rather than being reluctant to use it. And that one is mindset. So how much do you use the word mindset, Gareth, or do you use other words around it?
I think going back to another word we've talked about, environment that I now work in, because we've got a good environment that's very familiar with the word mindset, we actually don't use it that much, because we're finding that people are going into their practices, going into their nets, and they've got a much better understanding of what they're going to use that time and space for. So they have actually got their mindset in a good place. But initially I used it a lot, really, to make sure that when they went into a net, they went in with an appropriate set of thoughts in their head and had done enough thinking ahead of their 15, 20 minute net or their 45 minute practice, so actually that they're prepared to go in there and make the most of every minute. And the best players in the world, and you know, we go back to Kohli at the moment, he probably is the best player in the world presently, but every time he goes into a practice, when he talks about that practice, it's very clear on what he's going to go in there and very clear what he's trying to get out of that practice, and as a result every minute of that practice is going in the right direction. Whereas a lot of the time, certainly when I played, a lot of my practice was negative practice, because actually I didn't have the right mindset going into that first 20 minutes, and it would often take somebody to chuck a ball past my nose at a good rate of knots for me to actually get myself into that time and space. So I think mindset is crucial, and around gameplay, mindset is absolutely spot on. So the more you get that within your training environment, the more that's going to overrun into your performing environment as well.
Yeah, I love it. It's a quick way of summing up a whole host of different ideas, isn't it, by using that one word. So I do like using it. I am conscious of not wanting to come across like a psychologist or anything, so maybe I don't use it as much as I could, but I definitely like that word mindset, and I try and use it and maybe variations on it as much as I can to push that point home of, you know, what are you doing. Now, in this section of the show, we get some questions from listeners to this very podcast, or perhaps readers to the Pitch Vision website over at pitchvision.com. And the questions are sent in, and we answer them as best we can. And we also decide on the best question of the week, which wins a further prize of an online coaching course from Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com. You can send your questions into us by emailing coach@pitchvision.com, and we'll tell you more about getting in touch with the show via social media towards the end of the show. But for now, we've had a question come in from Alex. And Alex says, how do you get the best out of part-time bowlers in the middle of an innings?
It's a great question. The best part-time bowlers, and that, I mean, that's almost a contradiction in terms, isn't it? The best part-time bowlers. Because ultimately they end up becoming more than part-time bowlers. But when they start off, I think what they do need is a lot of guidance from their captain around what his expectation of them are. And a lot of the time, part-time bowler will come on, and really it's a defensive mechanism, because you're either coming on because somebody's been smoked around the park and you've got to make up their overs, or you're getting somebody in the middle overs of a game, hoping that they get three or four overs out, which means that then you can mix up your bowlers more appropriately at the back end of the inning, so nobody gets lined up through bowling consecutive overs at the, you know, at the death overs, really. So the best ones that I've seen, and the best captaincy of them that I've seen, has been when the captain has effectively said to him, right, this is what I want you to do, these are the fields that we want to set, and when you get hit, I'd like you to get hit into these areas. So you're limiting damage, really, initially. And what tends to happen over time, because I'd put Paul Collingwood in the part-time bowler at international level. Certainly at the start of his career, I put him into that. And the reason why I put him into that is I think he was very much guided by what the captain wanted. But over time, he became an integral part of our one-day side in particular, because he took that upon himself. He's got a great cricket brain himself. And he started to then, rather than being the part-time bowler, he was really only considered part-time because he was playing a major part with the bat. And he was often getting 10 overs out, but they were very clever overs. Often bowled back-to-back. He's not the type of guy that you want to bring back on for two or three spells, really. But he would bowl in all conditions, varying his pace. He developed a number of different slower balls. But in terms of getting the best out of him, I think he had a very limited role. This is what I'd like you to do. This is where I want you to be hit. And whether that was given by Michael Vaughan, who would have been his one-day captain at the outset, or whether that was something he came up himself, it was very... Think about those constraints that we talked about at the top of the show. I think exactly the same. He's trying to limit the amount of places that he can be hit for a boundary. He gets his right fielders in the right places. He knows that he's got three or four different types of balls, and this will give him a certain outcome against certain batters. And it's just clever. And I think one of the advantages that batters have when they bowl is that they can think like a batter. And that's certainly what he did. So he tried to do the complete opposite of what the batter was thinking at any given time. And I look at somebody like a Chris Gayle, and then back in the day a bit, somebody like Darren Lehman, as being great examples of batters who bowled, who ultimately would be called part-time bowlers, and they use their batting sense to make good decisions of whether to put pace on the ball or whether to take pace off, because they didn't have a bag of tricks, which was pace or massive amounts of spin or dip or whatever the case may be. They just had to use their acumen, their experience, as best as possible. So if I was captain of any of those guys, I'd try and build that up over a period of time, so in the end they make their own decisions, and they become less part-time and actually more a key part of your bowling unit.
And I guess, Lavers, a part of that is being prepared for that possibility. There's a big difference, isn't there, between being prepared for the possibility of having someone bowl who ideally you wouldn't have bowl in certain situations, and because someone's getting smashed, casting your eye around the field and going, oh God, we'll just throw the ball to Jim over there. I'm sure he'll do a decent job, and crossing your fingers. So that preparation for those situations is key as well. Even if the guy doesn't bowl very much in nets or whatever, just being prepared is a big part of the battle, isn't it?
Yeah, I think there's being prepared from a couple of angles, isn't there? There's being prepared from the point of view of is that person ready to do it, and also am I aware of what skills he's got and what he's actually able to achieve. So of as much as possible. I mean, these part-time guys, you probably get a bit out of them in the nets anyway. So can you roll over that idea of giving them some clarity in the match and saying that you've got these two options they can score into or whatever it might be, and we really want to dictate them and ask the batsman to hit in this direction? They're pretty simple questions and simple messages. Can we repeat those messages in training environments, in net situations, whatever it may be? And it might be that you have a couple of these guys up a sleeve, and the more you challenge them and give them a bit of direction as to saying, I'd like you to be able to control this guy in this way, and another guy might be controlling someone else, you start to learn a little bit about the bowlers, and maybe you've got a couple of guys up your sleeve and one of them's particularly good at one thing and one of them is particularly good at another thing. And often you'll get that where you've got the part-time bowler who's a bit of a golden arm, who'll get you a wicket, who might go for a few runs, but you kind of take it on the chin and you know that he's going to offer you a wicket. And you get the other guy who's really not going to threaten anything, but at least he can dictate the direction of traffic and where the ball's going to go a little bit. So knowing them and using them, and even if they're part-time in a match situation, doesn't mean they need to be managed as a part-time bowler away from that, because like you say, you've got to be prepared, you've got to know how you're going to use them, and the more time you spend with them, even it's like I said, very simple direction in training, that the more prepared you are and the more prepared they are for the task when it comes to match day.
It's going to be interesting now with Joe Root, because he's very much going back to what Lavers just said. He's that guy who often has a brilliant strike rate. So he comes on, he'd be considered to be a part-time bowler, but actually his ability to burgle a wicket out of somewhere is massive in all formats of a game. And it's going to be very interesting to see how he utilises himself as a spin bowler, because I should imagine that he'll probably back himself to do a little bit more of a workload than has been given to him by his captains over the last couple of years in particular.
I guess you look at he'll look potentially, and others might look a little bit about. I know Kane Williamson wasn't allowed to bowl for a while, was he? But I think he's bowling again now. And they're a pretty similar skill set all round in terms of batting and bowling, aren't they, those two? They're both now captaining the side in Test cricket. They're both very handy part-time off-spinners, and they're both pretty fairly complete batsman. So there's going to be an ongoing comparison between the two, and Joe might just look across and look at how Williamson has done it, whether he's done it correctly and given himself enough bowling or he hasn't given himself enough. I suppose depending on what your other strings to your bow are in your bowling attack, but they're both people in that situation where getting that balance right and bringing yourself on at the right time and not over-egging it is a tricky balance to achieve.
Davis, the echo gives such an authority to your voice. I just I'm in awe of everything you say today.
No, don't apologise.
It's like God telling you about
it. It is literally God.
Spinners.
Labour's is God.
Labour's is God.
Now let's see what he's got to say about this next question, which is from Vishal. Vishal says, I'm 16 years old and I received cricket coaching for about 2 months when I was 12. Since then, I never practiced cricket, and so I forgot everything about it. I want to start up again. So how many months would be required for me to learn up the basics quickly to play at club level?
Well, obviously it's a bit of an open question, and it's how long is a piece of string, I suppose. But first of all, I'd really try and think back to that time you had before, and even though you've said you've forgotten everything, try and be a bit more open about that. As soon as you say that you've forgotten everything, you've closed the door on it and it's gone. If you've forgotten most things, maybe you have, but are there things you can still remember? Are there little bits that you can reintroduce? And also, there are probably going to be things that, even if you don't consciously remember it, maybe your body remembers it sort of subconsciously, and things might still happen. So, look, I wouldn't set myself a goal in terms of how long I need to be ready for going to play club cricket. I'd just go and play cricket. Okay, go and base some cricket, go and play as much as you can, make some mistakes, work out how you're going to fix them, talk to different people, attach yourself to a club where there are going to be coaches and there are going to be people who are going to give you advice, and there's going to be a continual challenge of people who are better than you, maybe some your level, so maybe some a bit higher, maybe some a bit lower. But get yourself back in the system as quick as you can, and give yourself every opportunity, and generally the starting point for that is hit a load of balls, do a load of bowling, do the things that you're going to be preparing for, and until you do that, you don't really know what you need to change, what you need to do better, what you need to figure out in terms of the actual skills. So get yourself back in there straight away, come back to us in 2 weeks, 3 weeks time, with a load of questions about how you stop improving because you're doing so well.
That's important, isn't it, Gareth? Getting on that path and getting a game and learning a few things and starting off and then working things out from there as you go along, rather than thinking that you need to have a beginning to end plan that is absolute perfection before you even start, because that just stops you from starting, doesn't it? You need to sort of get muck in, get messy, and as you say, get on with it.
Well, I reckon the reason why you got into it when you were younger was because you played. You played a game, whether it be one on the street, whether it be one at school, whether it be one down the club. You're exactly right, David, and get involved in that game. The added advantage that you've got this time around is that you do, whether you are conscious with it, as Sam said, or whether it's something in your subconscious, and something that's in your body anyway, you've got some information there, you've got some experience there to inform you going forward. So you've got a head start second time around that you didn't have when you first started, but I'd encourage you to do exactly the same thing as you did initially, which is just to go and get a couple of games. And that can be as simple as just having a bit of competition with some mates on the street and hitting a few balls, or it could be something a little bit more formative, which is, you know, getting involved in a 2020 game or whatever the case may be that is around you. But you'll soon realise where you are as a result of play. And that's one great thing about match play, is that we are very quick to find out exactly where we are or where we're not when we play in matches. It's very definitive and it's very harsh in some ways, but it does give us that real clarity about where we are.
And this situation slightly reminds me of a card game that I got for one of my children for Christmas. It's called Exploding Kittens, but don't worry, there's no kittens are harmed in it. I don't know if you've heard of that one, have you, Gareth or Lavers? Exploding Kittens?
No, but I'm intrigued. I'm going to look it up straight after we finish this.
It's a card game, and it's a ridiculous game with lots of very silly stuff in it. It can be played by anybody, but you very quickly realise that it is the whole point of the game is not to, even though someone wins, the whole point of the game is not to win, because you have no control over whether you win or not. It's how the cards are assigned to you completely randomly, and as soon as you realise that even though you are competing, you can't compete, that because whoever wins. You just suddenly start enjoying the game for the sake of playing the game, because you have no influence on the outcome. And if you're an, I feel like there's a parallel here by saying it doesn't, even though you have more of an influence on the outcome as a playing cricket, you can enjoy it for the sake of enjoying it and do it and see how well you can do and see how quickly you can improve. And that becomes you play for the sake of doing it. And then you might last a little bit longer than 2 months, whereas before you might have been so focused on being successful that you gave up a little bit too quickly when you realised you weren't progressing as fast as you wanted. So, Exploding Kittens, at the very least, check that game out. It's good fun.
There was actually quite a nice article this week by somebody, which isn't going to help you, by Tom Scollay, I think his name is. And it was
a
nice little article. It wasn't anything kind of groundbreaking in my opinion, but it was just a nice observation that if you're always chasing perfection, then you're obviously always going to fail, and that's an obvious thing. But also the way that can impact on your confidence is that you can very quickly find yourself underachieving and subsequently losing confidence, whereas if you're striving for effectiveness, then it's a very different kind of goal that you're working towards, and it's something that's a lot more achievable. So whether or not it felt perfect, whether or not it looked perfect, isn't the most important thing, especially when it comes to playing out in the middle. It's did it work, did it do a job, and was it effective? And I think when you're restarting, you can think back to, oh, I remember when I used to hit the ball really well and I did X, Y, and Z, and ultimately those things are a long way away, and if you're going to judge yourself by those things, it's pretty difficult to succeed, especially in the short term. Whereas if you can just judge yourself by, right, my job initially is to do X, Y, and Z, can I be effective, then it's a slightly different goal, and it is one that's probably more achievable, and it's hopefully going to breed more a bit more confidence following some success and a bit more progress as you develop that belief in yourself.
And if I relate that back a little bit to when we all played, because there wasn't a great deal, certainly in my years, because I'm a bit older than you guys, but when I started playing, there wasn't youth cricket around. So my initial entrance into the game was playing amongst adults. And effectiveness was everything then, because it wasn't about being the best player in the team at that time. It was about being able to contribute in some way to the team. And often that would be blocking the proverbial backside out of it, whilst the stronger adults would go about it and whack it about a little bit more. But if I could bat for 50-odd balls whilst we put on 70 and I got 15 of them, then that was an effective contribution to the side. And I got feedback based on my effectiveness. Equally, when I was fielding, I was never going to throw the ball from huge distances. But if I got myself behind the ball and if I put myself in the way of it and I stopped it, even if it hurt, even if it made me cry, I was being effective, and an adult would say to me, well done, as a result. And that's where that confidence comes from. I think the challenge sometimes when we play with our peers is that, especially if we're used to being the best in another aspect of our life amongst our peers, it can be difficult when we're not quite so good to start off with at a new sport or a new activity. And that's where people then turn around, and we see it a lot nowadays in modern society, and go, well, I'm going to jack this in. And that may have been something that happened in this case when you were 12 years old. But now you've got those 4 years of experience of life, which I think is absolutely crucial. And you'll go in there with a far more realistic sort of appraisal of where you're going to go and why you're going into the sport to try and give it a go. You'll have different motivations now to when you went in when you were 12. And I wish you all the best. But I think that's a great point that Sam made around trying to be effective rather than trying to be brilliant or perfect or whatever the case may be.
And that is just about all we've got time for on the show this week. As usual, before we go, there's just one more thing that we need to sort out, and that is the winner of this week's competition. The online coaching course from Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com is on offer. And the two questions were, just as a reminder, Alex's question about part-time bowling and Vishal's question about coming back to cricket after a long layoff. Which one did you prefer this week, Gareth?
I thought they were two great questions, but I'm going to go with part-time bowling because it gave me an opportunity to insult my mate, Mr. Paul Collingwood.
Yeah, well done to you, Alex. And Gareth, if someone else was listening to the show and they wanted their chance to win the prize as well as get the question answered on the show, then how could they send it in to us?
Or the new way of talking about it, which is abuse Collie. You can send your questions in to 0203 239 7543 or drop us an email on coach@pitchvision.com.
That is correct. You can also get us through social media. Of course, the Pitch Vision website, you can message us through that or follow the Pitch Vision Academy account over there and message us, whatever you want to do there. And you can also find us on Facebook, facebook.com/pitchvisionacademy. And Twitter at Pitch Vision Acad. If you want to listen to the show every week, you can go to your favourite podcast app and do a search for Pitch Vision Academy. You'll find us in there, and it comes out every Friday. It's free. And if you want to get the show notes or listen to old shows, download the show directly from our website, you can do that by going to pitchvision.com/academy and clicking on the podcast link for all the details there. That's all for this week. We hope you listen next week, but until then, have a good week. Cheers, Gareth. Cheers, Lavers.
Cheers, guys.
Cheers, fellas.